From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Bob Garfield, and this is the third and final part in our series, Repairing Justice. We begin this hour with a nightmarish parable. It happened back in 2015, and it started when a PR woman tweeted a joke.
Justine Sacco is a public relations executive, or she was at the time. And in 2013, she tweeted to her very small number of followers, "Going to Africa, hope I don't get AIDS. Just kidding, I'm white."
Lindsay Blackwell is a PhD student at the University of Michigan School of Information, studying online harassment.
In my subjective experience, that is super racist. And I think a lot of people on the internet also interpreted that as super racist.
Another interpretation is that it was a sympathetic, self-deprecating comment about white privilege. But either way, tweet begins to spread.
One of Justine's followers screenshotted that tweet, sent it to Sam Biddle, who at the time was a reporter at Gawker. Sam wrote a story about it, then was picked up in BuzzFeed and later in, you know, more traditional media outlets.
Woman gets on plane.
She was in the air, obviously without internet access, while this media frenzy was building around her tweet. And it got to the point where on Twitter, the hashtag #HasJustineLandedYet was trending number one worldwide. The fervor was sort of so strong. I mean, people were calling for her death. By the time her plane landed, they had to have a police presence at the South African airport to protect her.
Over a tweet, over what may or may not have been a thought crime, but which instantly triggered an internet mob exacting vigilante justice. And it's not particularly an isolated case.
Women like Brianna Wu, an independent game developer, was even driven out of her home, all for simply tweeting her opinion.
They told me they were coming to kill me. They told me specifically they were going to castrate my husband.
Gamergate, in which Wu and other women in and around video gaming called out the industry's culture of misogyny. Out came the trolls, threatening sex crimes, arson, and murder. The mob clamored so self-righteously and was so motivated by festering grievance that it became the foundation of a political movement, the alt-right, and has since attracted such odd, aggrieved bedfellows as militant evangelical Christians and white nationalists.
I'll get memes, direct message to me of, like, my face photoshopped into Holocaust gas chambers.
Slate senior writer Ashley Feinberg deals every day with the risks of muckraking, in her case, while Jewish.
A lot of things where I just kind of have to not look at my mentions for a few days until things calm down.
Feinberg, Wu, Sacco. All bullied, all victimized, but at least all adult.
She was known as Becca, and police say she took her life after getting bullied relentlessly by kids on the internet.
What was said to Becca that you'll never, ever be able to erase from your memory?
You haven't killed yourself yet. Go jump off of a building. That's a big one because that's exactly what she did.
On this program, we have previously discussed the volatile combination of mob psychology and the online disinhibition effect, groupthink plus anonymity yielding a sense of both power and impunity online. But increasingly, the aggression is seeping into the physical world. Sometimes that means having a dozen pizzas delivered to your victim. Sometimes it means tricking cops into dispatching a SWAT team.
Tyler Barris has admitted to swatting, calling authorities and triggering SWAT teams across the country to surround the homes of unwitting victims. In 2017, Barris thought he was swatting the home of a video game rival after a fight over a bet for $1.50. But police swarmed Andrew Finch's home, an innocent man with no connection to the game. He was shot and killed by police who thought he was reaching for a gun.
Yes, online dystopia has a death toll. In Myanmar and India, hundreds died in pogroms instigated by Facebook posts. Other Facebook incitements led to violence in Ukraine, Libya, Germany, and Philippines. The historians Will and Ariel Durant wrote that civilization is a clearing perpetually at risk from the encroaching jungle. Online, the jungle creeps steadily toward us.
Pew did some work in 2017 and found that in America, about 40% of adult internet users have personally experienced some form of online harassment.
researcher Lindsay Blackwell.
We're looking at 2/3 of adult internet users who know that this is a problem, and they're seeing these types of behaviors in their feeds when they sign onto Facebook, they sign onto Twitter, they hop onto Instagram. I mean, that's huge, and that's just in the U.S.
But how to fix it? Now, there's the rub. The law is too vague, too slow, and too easily evaded to have much impact. The golden rule, treat others as you want to be treated, doesn't fare well when nobody knows your name. So society has looked to big tech companies themselves to somehow police their own platforms, which is difficult, expensive, politically fraught, and extremely slow to develop. As a stopgap, a patchwork of human and algorithmic moderators vainly seeks to identify and remove bad stuff, which is approximately like trying to remove needles from haystacks with a bunch of fridge magnets.
You have this massive workforce of underpaid, mostly contingent workers who are sitting in front of a screen all day and being asked to review horrible, horrible content, one after the other, with very little time given to look at any individual case.
There's also the question of corporate priorities and a paucity of imagination or simply will to address the problem. Spurred by her own experience of being bullied and doxxed, Slate's Ashley Feinberg called for Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey to just shut down his site and then somehow got him to sit down with her for an interview. It was awkward.
For instance, if someone like tweets out our home address or phone number, it's like a crapshoot of whether or not Twitter is
going to... Oh, that's unacceptable as well.
Yeah.
We're not in a great state right now with our systems because they rely upon reporting. We're moving to a world that's a lot more proactive by utilizing machine learning, but that will have errors and mistakes.
Right.
We don't feel good about anyone being doxxed.
Right.
Certainly, we want to catch everything as much as we can, but there are limitations to how much we can do.
Don't worry, Ashley. We're on it. Well, not completely on it, but, you know, technology. We have that. And also jargon.
But ultimately, we want to make sure that the number of reports that we receive is trending downward. Better prioritization in the meantime, a lot more transparency, clearer actions within the product.
What do you mean by clearer actions in the product?
Finding the report button isn't the most obvious and intuitive right now.
Right. So
that certainly slows things down.
So what would be like an alternative to that?
Make it more obvious.
Dorsey's big solution for taming the encroaching jungle of barbarism as it threatens to swallow civilization? To make the report a violation button bigger. Maybe not right now, but, you know, they're working on it. Content moderation enjoys neither the progress nor the urgency it deserves. It would seem, in fact, that all the king's horses and all the king's men are completely at a loss. And so, in this hour, we're going to explore a wholly different approach for moderating online behavior, one that has nothing to do with artificial intelligence or report buttons or armies of harassment police. What it has to do with is sociology.
The big problem with the internet is really the big problem with humanity at large is that, you know, we aren't very nice to each other.
Lindsay Blackwell.
Until platforms shift their focus to behavioral change and really digging into the root causes of the behavior, I don't think content moderation alone can ever solve this problem.
Coming up, we'll look to a theory of rehabilitation from our analog world to understand how to abate antisocial behavior in our digital one. This is On the Media.